Not that he needs it. Every now and again, there's a voice that can connect the dots. Dr. King had that kind of a voice. He was able to link the struggles of his time. And we're lucky to have somebody in this generation that's coming up who is an African-American man who's not afraid to speak to the questions of justice for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. He's not afraid to speak to that issue and be on the front line of those struggles. We have a brother who's not afraid to speak to the question of justice for immigrants, justice for people who are the backbone of the U.S. economy and who are denied dignity and fairness, and who's there on the front lines with those marches. We have a brother like that. And at the same time, this is a brother who is deeply rooted in the hip-hop activism that got rolling and got momentum in the 90s and is now pouring through the 2000s. So many people say that Barack Obama is energizing young people. And that's true. But it's equally true that young people are energizing Barack Obama. Yeah. See, it's equally true. And one of the reasons that young people, as Baye Adolfo Wilson was breaking down last night, one of the reasons that young people can play such a sophisticated role in his campaign with cutting-edge technological tactics, out-organizing the best and the brightest of the Democratic Party and under the radar screen where nobody even knows what's going on, the reason that the political youth underground is so devastating is because there are people who, away from the spotlight, were planting those seeds and tilling them. And one of the great master tillers of his generation is coming to the stage. The man who most, in my opinion, channels and represents the hip-hop generation's version of Dr. King. I bring to you Reverend Lennox Yearwood. Come up here, Rev. Come up here. Y'all better get up. Y'all better get up.
Thank you. Come on, y'all. Give it up for Van, y'all. Now, y'all could do better than that now. You could do much. Come on, come on. Oh, I know y'all could do. Come on now. I didn't say get up for Van, y'all. You could do better than that. I really want to thank you, Van, and for all of you here today. It's good to see my brother Paradise out here from X-Clan in the audience. And you mentioned Ali Starr and your wonderful staff for putting together a phenomenal program. Let me just say this, which you sometimes don't know in the movement, that you've got to push on. I'm glad to be here. I'm from the South as well, so you might hear that little drawl. I was born in Shreveport, Louisiana. And Van also is from the South, even though he's gone to the West and I've gone to the East. I think we also, we need to try that hand one more time, because when I was home, I got a phone call, and somebody says, you know, in the midst of planning this conference, and knowing that Van is from Tennessee, and so glad to hear his family's here, but in the midst of planning this conference, Van's father went to sit next to Dr. King in the heavens. And so you might not know that. So let's just give it up one more time for Van. It's not easy. It's not easy. It's not easy. Sometimes this is the untold story. sometimes when you look at activists and you see them and they're pressing on in this process, and let me just say, for me, it's not easy. Some of you might not know, I was once in the military. I was a U.S. Air Force officer, and I had begun to speak out in the military against the war. Now, if you don't want a good career move, don't do that now. But my military and my government decided to discharge me as a threat to national security. And no, that's all right. That's all right. And we beat that. They had to change that and take me off no-fly list, and they had to release me as with an honorable discharge. And when I went to the Petraeus hearing, because I recognized that when generals lie, soldiers die. And when I went to the hearing, I was in the halls of Congress, and I was trying to get in to a public hearing and was beaten up. This wasn't 1968. It wasn't 1967. It was 2007. And I was beaten up, and now I have a slight limp that I probably got to deal with. But that's all right, because in that process, we won that case as well. But as I was preparing to come here, Van, to this Green for All and this critical discussion and conference during this critical day, I received a summons for my arrest, because at a No War, No Warming rally back in October of last year, they said that I caused disorderly conduct by speaking on a mic like this. So now I'm been charged. So, and I also know, but I went to the museum, that I know now that sometimes when I go places, I have my staff who's here, Hip Hop Caucus staff, and I know that folks come with us too, when they come with us. So for them who might have come and joined our entourage, who are listening to this tape, can we make some noise for them? Can somebody get on your feet? Come on, come on. Get on your feet and somebody make some noise so we can see who's in the house. Come on. You can know who's next to you. Look next to you. Look next to you. Somebody make some noise. If you want green jobs, make some noise. You want this war to end, make some noise. You want to end poverty, make some noise. Okay. Okay, y'all all right. When somebody has to go back to Bush, they're going to say, man, hey, maybe make some noise. Let me be clear in case since the tape is running. I am here for one reason and one reason only. Poverty must end in the 21st century. This country must provide jobs and green jobs, and not jails. And if that's wrong, then I'm just gonna be wrong. But I'm gonna keep talking about it. They wanna give me some more disorderly conduct for talking about it. I'm gonna keep talking about it, because we need to create green jobs and not jails. And if that's wrong, then we all gonna be wrong. Let me say this. We are here today, and I'm glad it's raining outside, because this is a serious occasion. You are standing in the midst of history. And in the midst of history, you should recognize that today, and I'm sure in the heavens, that they've gathered and looked around, and I'm sure they are saddened that they could kill a peacemaker at 39 years old. And I'm sure right now in heaven, see, what you can see outside might look like rain. But now in the heavens, you got sitting up there Gandhi and Medgar Evers and Malcolm and the 4,000 plus troops and 1 million plus Iraqis and those who were slain in Rwanda. And you got them sitting there looking at Martin and saying, Martin, you should not be here. Because if they would have left you alone to discuss peace and jobs and justice, then we might not be here as well. You should not be here. Gandhi's sitting up there. Now, I'm sure they thinking about it. And they looking around and they at the heavens and they're seeing us and how we're destroying our earth and how we're destroying ourselves. Their tears are coming down. So when you walk outside today and you feel the wind and you see the rain, it ain't wind and it ain't rain that's coming down from heaven or Memphis today. But it's not only tears of sadness, it's tears of joy, because they look to the right and they see the balcony where Dr. King was killed. And they say, Martin, you shouldn't be here. But then Martin says, hold up, because you look to the left by the convention center. There's some folks who've gathered there. If you just look to the left of the convention, there's a bunch of young folks who said it ain't gonna, the dream did not die on the balcony. And we are the dream generation. Somebody make some noise. Look to the left, Gandhi. Look to the left, Medgar. Look to the left, Malcolm. Look over there. They're on their feet. They could have given up 40 years ago. They could have called it quits. They wouldn't have been born back then. And they still fighting for the dream. The dream did not die on the balcony. It didn't die on August 4th, 1968. They keep thinking it's gonna die. But look around. Look at your neighbor. Martin said, I have a dream that one day black babies can work with white babies. Sons and daughters of former slave owners can work with some of the former slaves. Look around the room. The dream did not die on the balcony. We are the dream generation. You are the dream generation. Black and white, brown and yellow, Native American, straight and gay, theist and atheist, male and female. We are the dream generation. We did not die on the balcony. So here we are. And let me be very clear. There are those who want to see this go away. There are those who want to see Ray Ray in jail. There are those who want to see Ray Ray killed over in Iraq. There are those who want to see us because of their greed. They don't care about the climate and how that matters. I'm so glad I have a friend at Climate Counts, and he gave me this little thing. He said, Climate Counts, he said, governments need to regulate, businesses need to innovate, and the people as voters and consumers need to motivate. To make real and lasting environmental and social change, we must have all three of these at once. And so we must not recognize this. When Dr. King gave his I Have a Dream speech, he was 35 years old. He would have been hip-hop. But most importantly for us in this movement, in the climate movement, there is no kiddie table in this process. You need to understand that the one thing about then in the SCLC and the groups of that day, and this, and you heard from Afinisha Corr and the Black Panther and all those movements, they recognized they had to do the movement. They could not allow for anything to create a kiddie table. We're not some, this today is no sidebar to the movement. And let
me say this about August 28th. As I close 1963, Dr. King gave his I Have a Dream speech. And to show you that we still have work to do, 42 years later, from the exact date that Dr. King gave his I Have a Dream, 42 years later to the day, August 28, 1963, he discussed about a promissory note. Every time people go to cash this note, it comes back bounce mark insufficient funds. He talked about ending poverty. 42 years later from the day, on August 28th, 2005, we have Hurricane Katrina hitting New Orleans. It's amazing to me that 42 years later from the day he's talking about a dream that we have in the 21st century, folks walking to a convention center and walking around going to a nightmare. It's amazing to me that on the day Dr. King discussed this dream 42 years later. But thank God we didn't give up. Even though we saw grandmamas and babies drowning in the richest country in the world, it's amazing to me that even though we see our climate out of control and swirling around with Katrina, sit saying that the dream did not die on the balcony, but we have a dream reborn. And even though everything should be against us and we should give up hope, we have a dream reborn. So let me tell this to you now. Most of us, like me, we weren't here on April 4th, 1968. We weren't around. We don't understand what it meant when Dr. King was felled by that bullet. But most of you were around during September 11th, 2001. Most of you were around and know where you were and what you were doing on September 11th, 2001. And the one thing about that, we now have an opportunity that on September 11th, 2041, 40 years after 9/11, where will we be sitting? Will we have came to this conference and pontificated and talked and done nothing and there's still no more green jobs? Will we still have wars all around this world? Will we still be dependent on foreign and fossil fuels? Will we still have racism and poverty? Or will we say we were there in that convention center and we stood up and we fought for justice, and now 40 years later, we're not talking about what or what or what could have happened, but we have justice in America. What America will you see in 2041? Now, somebody make some